It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
The God Journey.
Aren't you glad that Jesus didn't return while we were at Ice at Rest?
I think we said that on the last podcast when we were right there in the middle of it.
Well, so. You probably said that about a half dozen times as we're walking the floor.
Boy, that was, oh gosh. It's so hard to be at ICRS for me. I just go.
You don't have any affinity for the Jesus junk.
Not the junk part of it. Not even most. I just went around to see what new titles are coming out. And so much of it's just more religious pablum. A lot of it is a new celebrity has published
a success story.
Yeah, it's like every year we'll slap a new guy's face on that same book because everybody will buy a book just because it's by that guy. What's in it is the same. I mean, I read through
some mousetrap.
Yeah, and so that's kind of creepy. And then seeing Jesus go into the bathroom, that was a little, I got to tell you, it was odd.
Okay, you need to put that in context.
I'm fully into the whole Jesus as man thing. I believe that, but you just never think of him.
Thinking that was him. I do think that was an actor character. Oh, did you think it was actually him?
I went in and got a word of boxing, so he didn't seem too disturbed. I figured I need a word from Jesus.
You that part. I was talking to the Roman centurion outside. I'm sorry.
See, I didn't want to talk to the centurion. Man, I'm going to get it from... Well, that was the Jesus actor there. And just watching him go into the bathroom going, that challenges all kinds of things about the humanity of Jesus.
That
I think are wonderful. Yeah, I mean, we don't really think of Jesus
going into
the bathroom. So when he walks in, I'm glad I wasn't in there when he came in because that would have.
What
been
do you do? Finish it quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Now I did get some concern on my blog about me being at ICRS.
Oh yes, really?
Yeah. So I'm
from the faithful.
Well, it's a guy named Jeff, and he said if you have a lot of concerns about today's churches, why on earth are you participating in a trade show of Christian retailers?
But it is realtors. Let's not go there.
Let's not go there
long,
either.
Long distance.
With their selling of trinkets, books, or poor and often erroneous teaching, surely a teacher of your discernment can see they have as much fault as the modern church. Why aid and abet and use them as an outlet for your books?
Didn't you tell them I drug you along?
I haven't responded. I just said, you know, I think you're missing the point. We're not really there to use anybody. And I think he misses the point about, do I have a lot of concerns with today's churches? I have a lot of concern with the way we do church, because I think it's more religion than church, and that's my concern. Whether I have a problem with just a congregation because it's a congregation, I don't.
No.
I'm often in them. No. In fact, last Friday after I left you left me actually at ICRS.
I did. I left you.
And I was still there for a few other meetings. But I went on to Michigan, and I spent all day Friday with the eldering couples of a congregation in upstate Michigan that has been reading He Loves Me. And a few of them have started into So You Don't Want Church Anymore. And they would want to just talk. Just would I come and sit down with them over lunch, and then the whole afternoon, they just ask questions. How do we process living love? What would that change about a congregation of people that took that seriously? And, man, I don't mind being in places with what, as much as I know to be the truth, I don't mind being in places with that truth, helping other people process it. I don't care that it's ICRS. We had some great conversations at ICRS with people that are in this trade. Although I don't know, I think Christian retailing is pretty much an oxymoron.
Yeah, but it's been around ever since the temple.
And before.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's been around a long time. But, you know, I do think, I don't think people get the idea that these are, all these people there are passionate Christians trying to expand the kingdom. It really is not. It's
a lot of them are just cogs in a wheel. This is their job. It's what they do. I mean, it's interesting.
It's about making money. The bottom line, publishers have to make money.
Yeah, they're in a business. I don't think there's something wrong with that. Otherwise, it's like, is it wrong to go to an auto trade show?
No. I would never go, but I
know, but I mean, I kind of go like, okay, this is selling books. It's not like, but because it's about God, oh my gosh, how dare you put a price on it? I just think a lot of people have really funky thoughts towards people who are doing business.
They really do.
And I don't know that it's fair to just, well, it's a bunch of money changers and they're trying to fleece the flock. And it's like, no, I think a lot of them honestly probably began from a place that they're wanting to genuinely communicate. This is their love. I mean, there's people that absolutely love books. I'm more of a movie guy. Right. So I really don't quite, it's like, well, unless it's vivid as I read it and makes me kind of envision something, it's like, well, okay, I'm not all that interested. I'm not a real book guy.
It's just a book. I'm a book guy.
I know. That's
I love
different.
A book. But
I look at that and it's like, I kind of get excited when I see them in their passion. Their book may not move me at all, but I like that they're excited about it.
That's funny.
I do. I think that's great. I mean, they're doing something that they really believe in. I go like, well, that's probably great.
And you're talking about the writers now.
I'm talking about
even
the
publisher
thing. Booth, whoever's there excited. If they're excited about what they're doing, I don't really feel like raining on the parade.
No, gosh, I don't either. I'm not going to rain on anybody's parade, but I'm wondering how many people are really excited about what they've got, or this is what they've got and they better act excited.
I think that's probably more the case as far as walking the floor.
Yeah, we were told a while back, somebody asked a group of publishers, how many of you publish what you really love? You're really excited about the things you publish, and no one raised a hand. These were the main publishers. That's kind of scary.
Yeah, and I'll be honest. I think we're in a wonderful situation that I don't understand that. Why in the world bother to spend time doing something that you don't enjoy or believe in?
Yeah, and how many of those publishing companies, because they're all owned by corporations now and boards, and it really is about the bottom line. I mean, CEO of a public-owned corporation, his task is to make the money.
Yeah.
His task
he
is not
he will get another task.
His task is not to extend the kingdom of God in the world. These are not mission organizations. I think people really misunderstand. But I was talking with someone there about the number of these even huge publishers that began with one good book and a vision.
Yeah.
And a publishing company, and not able to find a publishing company, yeah. So they started their own. And now they've become that,
yeah.
And now they're publishing stuff they're not necessarily excited about, but if we don't do 70 titles a year that do X amount of dollars, then we cease to exist.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of churches probably began as a couple of excited people hanging out and enjoying each other, and then thinking they got to mass produce that, as opposed to simply being an appreciator of that moment.
Yeah, I'm not even sure they have to mass produce it. I wonder if part of it isn't, gosh, we're having fun. Other people begin to come along and enjoy that fun. Because most churches I've been to that are on somewhat of a journey, almost every one began, quote unquote, as a house church. They began with a church and a home or garage or
something. Yeah.
But it wasn't like
a handful of people.
It wasn't like a true house church in that they were thinking about the house is the venue we want to be in. It was the house is the only venue we've got. So we'll start here. But then as more and more people come, I know the group that I was a part of, we talked from the very beginning that we would multiply this thing. We wouldn't just let it expand until we just wore each other out with all the programs needed to maintain it. But we could never make the decision to do that because people kept coming, and as more and more people came and friendships are being internetworked, and the only time they crossed paths was on Sunday morning, even though our Sunday morning event wasn't anymore a sense of community and we all know and love each other, it was really a gathering of strangers. There were enough people in there I did know and my kids knew that people didn't want to risk that. If we multiply this, we won't be in the same room with these people anymore. And what's going to happen with, and I think every group that's expanded deals with that reality. It's one thing to talk about, hey, let's see God unfold some wonderful things and do stuff new and risk stuff. And yet most people are saying, man, don't toy with what I already like because we'll ruin it.
You know what I think is so hard is when you start to go into the abstract of taking just the simple thing of what you're doing and then try to theorize about what others should be doing, I think it's honestly kind of a fruitless endeavor because it's like, you know what? I don't know what other people should be doing. I don't really think that's my job. I'm not their shepherd. I used to think that I needed to tell people what they should be doing, but I really resigned from that function and recognized I really only have control and responsibility over what I believe I'm supposed to be doing. And then I want to do it with passion and heart and a sense of love for others. And I'd love if other people did that with their lives. But I have really kind of given up trying to make that happen.
Is that why I couldn't get you to take a whip in hand on that second day we were going to ICRS?
Yeah.
You don't want to help me drive him out of there? I'm just glad it was a commercial building. It wasn't a religious courtyard anyway, so it didn't have any issues that way. But I think you're right. I think we do take on even some of the tone of emails and letters I get when people think, gosh, I have no business being in a traditional church environment. I have no business being at an ICRS trade show. I have no business being going, man, I'm going wherever Jesus asks me to go. There are environments I'm much more comfortable in and environments I'm less comfortable in. But look at Jesus, man. That guy traveled with all – that guy never limited where he would be or who he would talk to.
And you notice all the conversations of people that came to critique what he should be doing? Those aren't exactly the real high water marks.
Those were not the significant voices in his journey, were they?
No, they weren't. It's kind of funny because you sit there, it's like, you know what? He simply had the freedom to say, you know, I'm doing what I see the Father doing. And I really think that's our individual role. I'm not supposed to be doing what I see Wayne doing. I'm supposed to be doing what I see the Father doing as far as he's relating to me.
Or I'm not supposed to be doing what makes me the most profit.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think a lot of people miss that one.
Yeah. Well, I think it's that. We got another letter that kind of dovetails with this from Nate. And this was, gosh, probably 2 or 3 months ago. But he wanted us to probe this. As I reflect on your book, I think he's talking about So You Don't Want to Church Anymore. I'm not sure that this issue is addressed, but I would like some insight, and Brad's, if possible, on it. That's why I'm
probably not, but I'll try.
That is this. Have we turned the gospel into a commodity?
Ooh.
Ooh. And then I thought he was going to go on by selling books. But what are you going on by? By paying pastors.
Ooh.
I see a cultural system where people feel the need for a professional shepherd. They do.
They do.
So they write up a job description, making sure that this professional has time to study scripture, pray, teach, preach, and counsel.
Be a really good Christian.
They even draw up a contract for this professional shepherd, naming salary, vacation, retirement, mileage, sabbaticals, etc. In this essence, they have said, we want to hire you to study, teach, and discern. In return, we want to know about the kingdom. We won't get into whether or not they like or are willing to follow what the professional shepherd has found out about said kingdom. That was all parentheses.
I like this guy.
That's wise, dude, Nate.
I
so
like this guy. Wow.
So the question, has the gospel become a commodity? Has our culture made it into something that can be bought and sold through the paying of professional gospel readers and teachers?
I think absolutely
that's a provocative
true.
Question.
I think it unfortunately really has. Is that completely void of any merit? I don't know. I don't know how to conclude that yet. But I do think the sad reality is once you attach economics to it, it is really warpable.
And Jesus,
everything is warpable.
Isn't that what Jesus is talking about? He said, you're going to follow God or you're going to follow mammon.
Yeah, he puts those two in stark reality that
mutually exclusive
deities.
Consideration. And that's where I feel a certain amount of conflict when I'm in a place like ICRS. Because for 15 years, I mean, I was this professional guy that began with a group of people who said at the outset, hey, you know what? We're just supporting you guys, or two of us, because we believe in who God's made you to be and what he's asked you to do in the world. So we're not asking for all your time to serve us. Be in the community. Do what God calls you to do beyond this community. As the group grew, and they
Wayne, you need to serve us.
Then the job description. Now even we didn't have a job description starting out, but now the job description starts to change. Wayne, how much time are you spending in the school district helping them?
Yeah.
And we talked about one time about hiring a youth guy, and I said, are we going to be clear that this youth guy gets to spend like half his life just hanging out with youth, not our youth, but other youth, and seeing what God does? You know what I was told?
No.
We're bringing him here for our youth.
Yeah.
We're losing
We're
them.
Hiring a babysitter.
We need a guy.
We need a spiritual babysitter.
Wasn't just a babysitter. We need a guy to bring our kids back to God. Because our kids aren't doing great.
Our life isn't working.
Our life isn't passing. Well, maybe it is passing on to the children, but we don't like what it's passing on to the children. And then the guy comes in with, he's supposed to win the kids to Jesus. But so many times what they end up doing is...
A lot of ice cream, a lot of sleepover, a lot of... Yeah.
It becomes the fun stuff to keep them there. It's not the drawing. And I more than anything, last 15 years, apart from that, I've just lived in the freedom of waking up doing every day what God tells me to do. Now I'm, quote-unquote, the co-owner of Windblown Media.
I know, and you hate it.
I do. I do. I notice all my thinking process changes when I feel a responsibility to a company.
To an it.
Yeah. And I know you don't put that on me. You don't. I mean, I think.
No, even, I don't. I'd freely release you from it.
Even,
but
even the other books that we're doing two new books this fall, Windblown is, and we're, you know, some other stuff that we're taking a look at that's painful as can be. But when I think about living in the space of expanding what God's asked me to do with his kingdom in the earth.
Right.
That leads to me to a whole different set of thoughts and lifestyle.
That isn't monetized. That's missionally based. That's you hearing and you doing.
Yeah.
And there is a whole different freedom.
With no thought toward the money.
Exactly.
And that's when we didn't have much.
Right.
Some of that's changed because the scale of what publishing has happened. And now you've got to think about it. A lot.
I think it's like, remember that little musical Little Shop of Horrors?
Yeah, I never saw it, but
oh, you don't. Well, there's this little plant.
Yeah,
that in that little that in this little musical thing, there's this little plant that, and all of a sudden they got to feed, and it basically is taking a little bit of the person's actual blood, and it's this man-eating plant that the more the drama goes on, the bigger this plant is, and the bigger everything has to serve that. I think that's one of the biggest challenges is when you're doing something in the earth. When all of a sudden what you've done creates an it, it's like that Little Shop of Horrors. Pretty soon that thing, and in the musical, it keeps going, feed me. And I think that's what happened.
Oh, absolutely. I have to see this movie. I've never seen it.
Well, no, I don't know if it's that good. But
the point
to
is.
Me, the point is that powerful is that it is so difficult. How do you go about living in the freedom of just simply following Jesus without creating an it that starts becoming a little shop of horrors because it's saying, feed me. And you're just going like, I don't know. I think the tension of that is very, very challenging.
Which is true of our lives as well. And this has had to be monetary.
Yeah, your mortgage can say, feed me.
It's just anything that start. And I think success adds to this. I mean, the more fruitful something is,
the more it says, feed me.
Well, not only does it say, feed me, but people start coming out of the woodwork saying,
I'd like to be fed.
I want it to feed me. Can it feed me too? That's what. But then all the priority, what I get back to you is, then all the priorities change. It's not about, God, what are you asking me to do today? It's what do I have to do today to feed it, to keep my life from being eaten by this thing.
Yeah. And in the musical, that didn't really work out so well for most people.
Yeah. I don't think in life it works out well for most people.
No, I do. I think as soon as you create an it, it does start to devour people and things. And you start making decisions that aren't based upon people. They're based on turf, territory, thing. And you're just going like, I do think there's a real problem when you create systems of something. As opposed to living in the simplicity.
But we're in the middle of one of them.
I know that. That's why we're talking about this.
There's very problems when there's an it. We have an it. What do we do? Shoot it?
I don't know.
Beat it to death?
I don't know.
Keep waking up following Jesus every day?
I try.
That's me too.
I do. I try.
But it's more complicated today, isn't it? Than even when you were doing landscaping.
Far more complicated.
Yeah.
That wasn't an it. That was a what. That was a task to do.
It wasn't the Brad Cummings landscaping.
No, there was no empire. There was no success. There was no.
It was dog poop on a hillside.
Yeah. I mean, it's just wonderful stuff, I tell you.
Yeah.
But there was something of a living in a place of dependence. I got to tell you, the freedom I experienced in some of that journey, I don't want to trade for the comfort of some success thing. I really don't, because you just go like, I was more secure there than I am in the chaos of this.
Yeah.
I really was.
Yep.
And it was a whole lot simpler because it's like, you know what? I don't have a whole bunch of people who are wanting to be fed by this. I'm just doing the simple little thing that's in front of me. Now, I don't think that God is opposed to growing someone's measure of fruitfulness in what they do. But along with it comes the challenge of, are you going to let people look at you for their source? I mean, because people do. I keep going like, no, we're doing a different thing. I'm not going to be your source. I don't want a whole bunch of overhead. I don't want you looking at me as if I've got to be the one to bring up the goods. And yet the truth is most people, they're not looking for Jesus to be their source.
Oh, that's what I think.
That's too invisible and that's too hard.
And that's Nate's question. I want a professional shepherd. I want somebody in front of me. And even people who come outside the box of organized religion,
they still want somebody in front of them.
It may not be the pastor down the road now. It may be the author. It may be the podcast guy.
It could be the God journey.
It definitely is that for some. I mean, I get that kind of email. I don't have anybody else to share this with. What should I do about blah, 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 blah? And I understand people wanting to bounce that off. I think this is one of the big things between mammon and the kingdom.
Yeah.
Mammon breeds dependence for security.
Yeah.
It has to.
Feed me.
The kingdom doesn't breed dependence. The kingdom keeps pointing to Jesus.
Go and feed.
They keep, go there.
Go and feed my flock.
Find your answer there.
Yeah.
And other people, I mean, I love other people breathing wisdom into various bits of our journey. I've enjoyed that in my life all along. But at the same time, I think we do have a tendency to put people up on pedestals and make them the answer guy, for one. Two, somehow vicariously live through their experience, to be excited when they're excited, to be down when they're down. And not in the godly way of rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep, but actually I don't have a life that I orient around.
And so I'm going to live through yours.
My life's miserable, I'm going to find my king and pay him to do it.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that have watched what's happened the last couple of years, and to them it's like it has become their source of encouragement. And part of me wants to go, oh, great. And the other part of me was, I was like, oh, really? Why?
Yeah.
How? How does this have any direct bearing on your situation unless, what are you wanting? You know, and I started to hear the little grumbles of, feed me.
Well, that, or there's that validation that the shack, which is kind of countercultural, or my books now in Walmart as people walk in the door. I get a lot of that stuff from people now because they're present everywhere. I think there is... We talk about this often, the validation of, I must be on the side of good because look at the blessing of all this.
And we won the NBA Finals. It's like, wait, I don't remember you having a Lakers jersey. How did you win that?
Yeah, well, it's not just that. I think it's that validation of, we must be on the good side because God's blessing that message in the world. Now, I'm excited that message is going out to the world. I think it's
a profoundly wrong formula conclusion that just because something is blessing, that it has the outward trappings of success, that means it's validated by God as being fine.
Exactly.
There's a lot of things out there that are successful, but I'd have to go, I'm not exactly sure that you could say that that was God's doing.
Well, I haven't seen a best-selling book in years that I liked. You know what I mean? So one that I
liked, his last one
that I had some part in. I mean, it's been dumbfounding to me the way it has resonated with people. But I don't, you know, and I've had even people say to me, "Boy, this really validates you, doesn't it, Wayne?" And I'll go, "No."
Yeah, no, it doesn't.
No,
it doesn't mean anything.
I was just as cool with Jake when it was free on the internet, the Jake book, And then it was, you know, selling 4,000 or 5,000 copies. I'm excited about the lives that are touched. I'm really not all that excited about statistics and numbers and charts.
I mean, I have watched, I have had the sad misfortune, perhaps educational blessing, I don't know, it's between those two.
Okay.
Of watching a lot of things that have, quote, become successful be undone by their success. I mean, I really have. And it's...
Undone how? Priority shift?
Everything shifts. It's like you forget the simplicity of what it was when it was nothing. And then all of a sudden you start drawing conclusions of validation. Like, well, this must mean. And it's like, I sat there going, like, you know, we had one of the hottest churches going in L.A., and there were a lot of things that were not right in the foundation. And yet, because when all these people coming to Christ, everything must be fine. And I'm sitting there going, like, I'm living behind the curtain. No, it is not fine whatsoever. How are we justifying this because of that? And I think that's the wrong conclusion that a lot of outside observers draw is, oh, this blessing indicates that favor, and that must be God's endorsement of everything about you.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's remotely true.
That's the danger of that validation thing, that you think somebody's success was earned by their faithfulness, maturity, whatever.
Or their sacrifice.
That when that's exposed to be the reality that God uses flawed people. God has always used flawed people. God doesn't have anything else to work with but flawed people.
Like, there really isn't any material out there that doesn't fit that bill.
And I don't like the word God uses, but God makes himself known through broken lives. And then when it comes, if that's your validation, when it turns out you find out how broken that life is, then it kills you. If your validation hinges on that's been God's blessing because you've earned it, then it comes unraveled when you find out, whoa, he didn't really earn it, she didn't really earn it at all.
But I think that's where it all comes down to the fact that on whose foundation are you building your life? If it's anything other than Jesus, I'll tell you, life will shake it loose and it will come crumbling down. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's a good thing. I think so oftentimes when we latch on to somebody else's success or someone else's supposed endorsement of, oh, that must be the favor of God, I think you really are in danger of that wonderful, painful road of disillusionment, because I don't think any of that is true. I mean, I've learned this about all of us. Human beings have feet of clay. There's one guy with feet of bronze, and that's Jesus. And the rest of us get muddy. And you're just going, like, you know what? I'm no longer disillusioned by that. But wow, earlier on, was that ever so incredibly painful? Because I was always drawing the validation conclusion. This blessing must endorse and mean this is correct.
Right.
And I have learned a really painful road of, that ain't necessarily so.
Not often true, even. Not even ain't necessarily. Not often true.
Yeah, I still want to maintain that place that just says, you know what? I don't know. I say that more than anything else in life right now. It's either it is what it is or I don't know. Those are my two biggest repeated phrases. Because I just go, like, I don't know. I don't have God's heart on this yet. I'm asking for it. I'm seeking to discern that, but I don't like drawing summary conclusions about much of anything, because I've just learned I don't know, and I'm okay with that, totally.
Yeah, my frame of reference is not anything on which to base wide conclusions, because when I was in Colorado Springs for 3 days, it rained hard every day. I mean, major slamming thunderstorms, and the people sitting there saying, wow, we never get this in July in Colorado Springs.
And you're going, but I'm in July, and I got it for 3 days in a row.
My experience is every July, every day, every time I've been in July in Colorado Springs, it rains like crazy. So that's where our experience really leads us astray.
It does.
But part of the unraveling you were talking about earlier, things, success, unraveling. Well, I've been reading Proverbs lately. This is where I'm kind of mining. And boy, that whole contrast between the giving of Lady Wisdom and the seductress of evil and temptation, and how those two operate, where I see so much of the kingdom and mammon in that same thing. The kingdom invites. The kingdom
phrase
offers.
Deceitfulness of riches.
Yeah.
It doesn't say the wonderfulness of riches. It does say the deceitfulness.
It does. And one of the verses I was reading this the other day, I thought, gosh, what a verse. It just says, for the more you grab, the less you are.
And I thought, say that again.
That was in the Message. The more you grab, the less you are.
And good job, Eugene Peterson.
Oh, because I know the relationships I have in the body of Christ that are really wonderful and vital and valuable. Our relationships of honesty, integrity, generosity, it's not people trying to get something from me, nor am I trying to get something from them.
Right.
And I think most wonderful things happen when people live in that space of grace and generosity. But then when – this was true of the fellowship that I was a part of. When it began to grow and there was lots to grab onto, think, I like this. I want to be this. I want to be that. Now we're no longer brothers and sisters generously living in that space together. People become grabbers. And when people become grabbers, they marginalize people. And that whole idea of the more you grab for yourself, the less you become in terms of just being a human being.
And the only way to be okay with that is to justify the marginalizing of whatever it is that is suffering under your grabbing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only way you live with yourself. And I think that's, you know, it's like, I don't want to poke at the church. I don't want to poke. It's like, you know what? That's true universally.
In every institution
of
humanity.
That's true of every religion. That's true of every human being. That's a human predicament.
It's true in politics. Yeah, you bet.
And so it's like, you know, when someone like makes a comment like, oh, you know, ICRS, I'm just like, you know, they're just people.
Yeah.
It's true of the farmers' convention.
With a lot of junk.
Yeah, but
people.
But you know what? I mean, you and I can have widely divergent ideas here. But
it's nice that we do.
I walked the aisle of some of all that trinketness. You know, it was funny because I walked it, and there were a few things that caught my eye that I sat there going, like, you know, that's really pretty. I really did like
some
that.
Of it. I get.
I sat there and I said, you know what?
I bought something after you left.
It was after I left. I know it.
It's the good part of being about RCRS when it closes down. They'll sell that stuff at wholesale, so they don't have to ship it home. So.
There you go. That was smart. Way to go.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I looked at some of that, and I sat there going, like, you know what? That, you could walk by it, and you can go, like, oh, man, what the merchandising of the flock, and just, you know, have your whole bunch of opinions. And it could have been that the person that first originated that was wanting to share something of beauty that did inspire their soul. And they just sort of went, gosh, I'd love to give this as a gift. I know both of those could be true. I don't know which is.
Right.
And the real issue is not like, well, which is it? It's more like, you know what? I'm not responsible for that guy's heart.
Yeah.
I'm responsible for mine.
Yeah.
And what I do with it. And I know that I can take myself out. I think that's one of the biggest things that I get scared about. It's like, you know what? It's not just the deceitful of riches, but it's like the deceitfulness of your own heart. I can justify myself 20 times by Sunday.
Which we talked about a few podcasts ago. Yeah,
I mean, exactly. I have that capacity, and I can go, well, no, but I'm right. And it's like, well, maybe you're not.
Yep.
Maybe you're really wrong, but you lost sight of that and you don't know it.
Yeah.
That's where it's like, golly, I do need that searchlight in my soul named Jesus going like, help me. Yeah. Help navigate this. I don't want to assume that because of these outward trappings here, that means everything's fine.
Yeah. Let's get back to Nate's question. Have we turned the gospel? No, I just want to go from it. Have we turned the gospel into a commodity? You know how I want to answer that? Not on your best day. The gospel could never be reduced to a commodity. The gospel of Jesus Christ, alive in the world, inviting people to a reality of a relationship with his Father, that transcends business, that transcends all. So are we good enough to reduce the gospel to a commodity? No.
But we have been brokers of religion.
Can we? Yeah. In fact, can we cheapen our own relationship with the gospel?
Not the gospel.
Right. But our relationship.
I get what you're saying.
Yeah. There's a difference between saying, yeah, it happens all the time. And I know when I deal with particularly the number of pastors right now that are reading So You Don't Want to Go to Church Anymore because it's sitting in Walmart, which I think I have you to blame for that.
Yes.
But the biggest question I hear, and I know I felt it too when I was a pastor, and that is, man, if I really did what was in my heart, I don't know how I justify getting the salary I get. If you're really going to let the body of Christ be the body of Christ, if you're really going to rethink that paradigm and become an equipper of people, am I trapped by the salary I have and the job description I have and the expectations of people that are around me? And I would say, man, that...
Most of my email would say yes.
Yeah, that's a tough place to live.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to say to get... I mean, I know I wrestle with it. I know my co-pastor friend and I, went during the time where people look at each other going, boy, we think God's asking us to do that. But if we do that, how do we get paid?
See, but take it beyond just pastoral ministry. I know tons of people that are in their jobs. They hate their job. It isn't the passion of their soul.
And in this day and age, you're just happy to have a job.
Yeah. I mean, and so it's like you look at that, and it's like the challenge is like, okay... I don't really wake up in the morning thinking like, oh, you know, God has been profoundly at work while I've been sleeping to try to order my day in such a way that everything's happy. I got dissed of that illusion a long time ago.
Yeah.
So I just go, like, you know, there's some things that you just got to do because it's part of life and it's part of, you know, paying the freight of your living on the earth. And I want those things to be in sync with, Lord, is this what you have for me? When I'm trusting him to be my source, that doesn't seem to be so conflicted. When I'm trying to get my security from something else, I find myself, I'm able to be massively conflicted while ideally in my head, I'm really trying to follow Jesus. It's like, no, if you were, you know what that would be, and that's what you're afraid of.
Yeah, and I think that's where Jesus' words cut pretty sharp.
Yeah.
The God and mammon conflict in your head will destroy you.
And you can define mammon as security. You can define it as comfort. You can put it as a standard
stewardship,
living.
Stewardship.
Oh, sure. That's another great, you know, Christianism. You can gloss on it. But I think that whatever that is, I know there's been many moments where life has brought me to that cliff of decision. And Jesus seems to be out off the cliff. And you're just going like, gosh, Lord, that just seems flaky, that seems crazy, but I'm just going like, deep inside, my spirit does know that's him, and it's not crazy, it's not flaky, it's unknown, and I'm not in control, and I don't have a guarantee that everything's going to be just the way I want it, so I'm scared.
In fact, you can pretty much guarantee it won't.
Yeah.
If you're going to live inside Father's provision, it's not Father's provision for your appetites and desires.
No.
It's Father's provision for his purpose unfolding in your life. And that could be very, very different. I read an article by Watchman. I was sitting in a home in Massachusetts, and I was staying with a Catholic guy who was the only one who had room in his house. He wasn't even part of the meetings I was at, but he'd listened to some things I'd done. They had a bed for me there in his house. And we got up one morning for breakfast, and he said, I don't know why, but I feel like I need to give you this. And I was going through, it was early in the live stream days and not sure whether this was a full-time gig, if I need to do something else to make it work, had the whole bridge builder, you know, how God resources this life. But much more learning to live in that space. And he handed me an article by Watchman. I think it was from the Normal Christian Church Life. And was talking about those who make their living from the gospel. And what he said was this. He said, any man or woman that makes their living from the gospel, he had a number of things he said. Number one, they should never draw a salary. Number two, they should never ask anyone for a dime. And then his conclusion was this. Because if a man or woman isn't trusting God to provide for them, God will not entrust them with his people, his work. Because you just end up using them.
Yeah.
I read that. I remember... I didn't read it there. He just said,
it's haunting. Those are haunting words.
I read it down the road a little bit. I read this article, and I remember as I'm reading, I'm going, this is what I've always been afraid was true. It wasn't like, wow, this is really cool. It was like, okay, and it's not saying there can't be people that God gives full time to the world and
there are
life and sharing and whatever. But if you're not trusting God for that resource so that you have to figure out a way to be resourced, then that's the God mammon roads that are just mutually exclusive. You can't be following Jesus with an eye to the mammon. You can't, or walking in the mammon with an eye to Jesus. You can't do it.
I look at the last 5-7 years, and you know, I'm watching you aspire to just get, Lord, what do you want me to do today? And you don't draw a salary someplace. You don't draw a paycheck. You don't want, you know, I mean, I'm sitting there going like, okay. And then I'm sitting there going like, well.
I was trying to invite you on that road.
I know. But I'm sitting there going like, okay, I got to pay the mortgage. So I better do this landscaping thing. I got to have something. And I just remember the significant challenge of going like, you know what? I don't want to hint to other people that I need something. I don't want to get a list of supporters that would you free me to serve Jesus? Like, well, I'm serving Jesus in the ditch right there. Okay? It's not my favorite place, but it's like, it's what I could do at the time. But I remember the whole challenge is, am I really trusting God even in that as the means by which I'm getting money? Or do I have the ability to trust that if God wants me to do something else, He will also provide through some other means. And it's like, you know what? As a single person, that's not as challenging to embrace as it is as a father, as a husband, as a mortgage, you know.
Yeah, got the mortgage.
He's just going like, golly, nobody's exempt from living here. But it is a significant challenge to go, Lord, what does that look like in my life? Am I supposed to mirror what Wayne's doing? Is it just for ministry people? No, I think it's, you know what? There's nothing greater than the blessing of being able to know, you know, I'm doing what God's asked me to do. I think, you know, one of the things...
And not because I need to get a paycheck.
Yeah.
Because I see a lot of guys who were pastors, feel trained as pastors, and somehow want to get out of that and then start a house church network or something that can still derive them an income. And I understand the passion for that. I do. But I think that always twists...
It warps it.
It twists anything having to do with the kingdom. If the goal from the beginning is, I hope to do kingdom work and I need to make a living out of it, then the reality is, and I need to make a living out of it, will control the moment. Because I really don't think the choice between God and mammon is I wake up and I get to choose between those two. It's I either choose to live inside God's revelation for me. The default setting is I end up on the mammon road. That's the default. If I'm not actively choosing to live inside the other reality, I think that's how people ask, you know, how do we begin a church? How do we start a church? And most of the time I get that question. It's
just
somebody,
be a church. Well, be.
I think the early church didn't begin because somebody tried to start something. Because Jesus didn't tell them what to start. I think what happened was they came alive in Jesus and they found how community happens. That's why I tell people all the time, the church is not the means to achieve God's work in the world. The church is the fruit of what God's doing in our lives.
Okay, you've just lit off a hand grenade there.
But we're out of time. We can't even pursue that.
We can?
We'll have to do it another day.
Oh, that's a big tease.
But we can. John said this, though. Maybe this is a way to close our podcast. He said, you all are pioneers in the reality of focusing it all on relationship in Christ. I really have a hard time trying to figure out all you do. But it just seems when I let go trying to figure out everything and just trust, things work out.
See, it does.
I can't explain it. It just works. So I'm really trying to live in that trust alone. That's a great place to end this.
Because that's him doing what God has for him to do. The rest of it's trying to theorize about what you should do, and I don't know the answers to that.
And the angst of trying to figure it out before you just follow will freeze you forever in no man's land.
You can figure it out and God not be a part of it.
Or mostly we'll never figure it out. We keep asking, keep reading, find another book, find another guy, tell me what to do. I'll be happy to do it.
Thank you for traveling with us on The God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.